This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 384. This episode was pre-recorded. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Let's all take our seats. It's Crisis 105. For the Earth to live, one of us must die. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. We are taping this in advance, and we continue with our run of the JLA-JSA team-ups going all the way through the Crisis on Infinite Earths. And in our last class, a grief-stricken Black Canary switched Earths, and the Spectre died again. So let's move on to Earth the Monster Maker. Justice League of America, number 91, 1971, by Friedrich, Dillon, Giella, and Costanza.
But it doesn't have Crisis in the name of it.
I know. This is Mike Friedrich's only team-up story. He's kind of doing the handoff between Denny O'Neil and Len Wein. And in this only 25 cents bigger and better issue, the roll call on the cover includes, from Earth 1, Superman, Flash, GL, Hawkman, Adam, and Robin as special guest star. And from Earth 2, Superman, Flash, GL, Hawkman, Adam, and Robin as special guest star. Why isn't he in the JSA now?
Well,
but you see a pattern here? It's all the doppelgangers. On the JLA satellite, 22,300 miles above the Earth, absent members are explained because Green Arrow and Black Canary apparently turned in their time cards and are on official leave.
They have time cards?
No, but they're like, he's on official leave, but he's not.
Ugh.
The JLA of the 70s is very bureaucratic. And Aquaman is AWOL after events in apparently the last issue. Batman arrives in the transporter with a dead Flash, and he announces, "We have a super crisis on our hands." Probably a better title for this issue. We cut to alien teenagers joyriding in a spaceship, and two of them, A-Rim and his pet Teppy, accidentally are swept into two other dimensions. Guess which those two are. Which apparently means death for them to be separated for very long. Both go crazy and start laying waste to Earth 1 and Earth 2. And on Earth 2, GL runs into alien A-Rim and it doesn't go well. His power ring is stolen, and the alien gets away.
How could you get your power ring stolen?
Because they hadn't apparently put in safeguards at this point. A-Rim knocks him out and then just grabs the ring. And the JSA gang arrives to assist. Hawkman is condescending to Robin. Well, you might as well join us and fill in for Batman, even though he's been established as a member of the JSA. Back on the JLA satellite, Flash wakes up, goes nuts, and collapses.
So he wasn't really dead.
Right. Adam has used Thanagarian tech to save Flash, which was a common Deus Ex Machina in this era. The Thanagarians is the race that Hawkman came from. Green Arrow and Black Canary arrive, but what about their leave? Oh no, more forms to fill out. Aquaman also checks in for some reason. Flash mutters New Carthage, where no longer Boy Wonder Robin goes to college. This Hawkman is also condescending to Robin. Message coming in.
So Robin's going to save the day, apparently.
Yeah. GL's ring senses something happening on Earth 2. Superman states the obvious. Oh no, not again. Another super menace simultaneously threatens both our Earths. The teams meet and decide on mixed teams because Adam says it would be more scientifically sound, but never explains why. So Green Lantern of Earth 1, the Hawkmen, and the Robins find A-Rim on Earth 2 and try to talk him down. There's a fight. A Robin of Earth 1 is hurt, and Robin the Elder is volunteered to watch over him in the Batcave. Kind of said, you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then A-Rim uses Green Lantern of Earth 1 to take out the Hawks, while Flash of Earth 2, the Atoms, and the Supermen find Tepi on Earth 1, which grows huge and takes out the Kryptonians. Atom of Earth 2 has no luck, so they create a diversion and trap the pet. Flash of Earth 2 and Superman of Earth 1 go to Earth 2 in order to check in, leaving the others to guard Tepi.
Why didn't they just take Tepi with them?
Well, they don't know anything about A-Rim at this point.
Oh, okay.
They just know they found this weird thing. And then A-Rim runs into Solomon Grundy, and of course they became buddies for no apparent reason. The Earth 2 hero team runs into the pair, and the battle begins. Grundy takes out the Hawks, Flash of Earth 2, and Superman of Earth 1, because remember, he's magic-based, that's why Superman can't take him on. A-Rim takes out GL in order to get his ring, and Grundy is about to use Supes as a battering ram to kill GL, leading us up to Solomon Grundy, the one and only. Justice League of America number 92, 1971, by Friedrich, Dillon, Giella, and Costanza. We waste 4 pages explaining why there's hero doppelgangers on the two Earths and rehash the last issue. There's lots of filler in this issue. Superman in Grundy's clutches boxes the Marshman's ears. And then back to the Joyriders, who are desperately working to track down A-Rim and Tepi. Thursdays at 9 at 8 Central. A-Rim and Tepi. A-Rim stops Grundy from killing GL because he senses GL can find Tepi, giving Flash of Earth 2 a chance to attack, which fails. The Bruised team runs away to rest. Oh, and remember the Robins? They're in the Earth 2 Batcave, and they commiserate over being underestimated. Robin of Earth 1's costume has been badly ripped, so the Robin of Earth 2 offers him something he considered apparently over the Colorforms Bat/Robin costume he's currently wearing. From costume maker Neil Adams, nice plug. It's basically a more adult Robin costume with no bare legs or arms. They decide to team up, right on. And then back on the JLA satellite, Black Canary brings us up to speed. She's playing nursemaid for Flash of Earth 1. She contacted his wife, Iris Allen. There's no word from Batman, Green Arrow, or Aquaman. This is all obviously a setup for the next story. Iris arrives in this swinging outfit. She must have apparently transporter privileges to the JLA satellite.
I would guess spouses would be able to get, yeah.
And no more forms to fill out. Oh, geez. The link of love is here to sustain him. Whatcha-wow. And back on Earth 2, the wounded warriors come to the JSA HQ where Green Lantern of Earth 2, without a ring, is hanging out.
Can you call him a Green Lantern if he doesn't have a ring?
Still got the costume. GL of Earth 1 whips up a temporary replacement ring, and they say the oath to charge up. The Robins check in, and the Hawkmen are, say it with me, condescending to the Robins. A dying A-Rim activates the stolen GL ring, helping the other aliens track him down. The Hawks see him with the ring or about to attack when the Robins come up on a motorcycle, and the Hawks don't recognize the new Robin costume, although it's virtually the same as a regular Robin costume, just continue. It's longer.
The Hawkman just can't.
Full pants and full sleeves.
The Hawkman has just been blinded by Robin's skin all along and doesn't recognize him without the skin showing.
And the Robins manage to get the ring away from A-Rim. Hawkman of Earth 1 comes in, fails yet again. Robin of Earth 1 fights A-Rim, who collapses. Elsewhere, the GLs fight Grundy and realize their power is split with the loaned ring, so they work together to knock out Grundy, which I thought was impossible. That was kind of the whole point of Solomon Grundy. You couldn't knock him out. Hawkman of Earth 1 arrives with GL of Earth 2's ring. The dual rings are used to put Grundy back in his own swamp, with an impenetrable barrier around it, which we know won't last.
It never does.
Both the alien and the pet shrink and collapse. The Robins figure it out, and so the alien and the pet are brought together and saved. The other aliens track them down and learn a valuable lesson about interdimensional joyriding. The Hawks apologize to the Robins. Earth One Robin decides he may keep the new costume, and the editor invites us to write in, "What do you think, readers?" He also wonders whatever happened to Batman. Well, that's for the next issue of Justice League of America. But we're on to The Unknown Soldier of Victory, Justice League of America number 100, 1972, by Wayne, Dillon, Giella, and Oda. Now, I'm using the Crisis on Infinite Earths trade paperbacks as a reference here, but I could have pulled this out of my own collection. This is the first three-parter in the team-up series, and I read these original issues until they almost fell apart. They certainly aren't the first comics I read, but I would say that if Crisis on Infinite Earths brought me back into comics in college, JLA 100 through 102 got me into comics in the first place.
Thanks a lot, comics.
The cover shows Superman of Earth 1, Flash of Earth 1, GL of Earth 1, Batman of Earth 1, Our Man, Starman, Dr. Fate, and Wonder Woman of Earth 2 all at the grave of the Unknown Soldier of Victory, while the ghost of the Seven Soldiers of Victory hang in the sky. Oh, you don't know who are the Seven Soldiers of Victory? Not surprising, because this is their first appearance since the 1940s. Their first appearance was in Leading Comics number 1, 1941, created by Mort Weisinger and Mort Weskin. And if the JSA is the pro team of Earth 2, the Seven Soldiers of Victory is kind of like the AA club. All but one have no powers. There are multiple sidekicks involved. And all are characters from DC's anthology series at the time, Action, Detective, Adventure, More Fun, and Star Spangled Comics. They're also known as the Law's Legionnaires. They had a 14-issue run, after which Leading Comics became a humor title, and the team disappeared. Now, we'll meet them as we go through the storyline. By the way, the cover says there will be 33 heroes involved for the big anniversary, so settle back. Up on the JLA satellite, 22,300 miles above the Earth, nobody's home. The JLA team decide to check in on the original mountain sanctuary, now all cobwebby. Aquaman, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Black Canary, and Hawkman chat. The phone rings, but it was disconnected. Well, the Atom pops in, who had the ability in the Silver Age to shrink and travel via phone lines.
Even disconnected phone lines?
He apparently did some switching at the central station or something. And he asked where the others are. And so we see Elongated Man and the Flash wrapping up a case. Martian Manhunter too busy rebuilding Mars. Metamorpho, who I didn't even think was in the league, forming a plane to fly to the party. Snapper Carr refusing to go after he, of course, betrayed the Justice League.
Yeah, good. No Snapper Carr.
Batman wrapping up a case in Gotham. Adam Strange not attending due to the Zeta Beam misscheduling. And back at the sanctuary, Superman has arrived. Zatanna drops in, and Batman arrives with Diana Prince. And this is during her No Powers, Emma Peel, I Ching period, wearing the white jumpsuits. There's a huge cake, which of course the girls have to serve.
Yeah, of course.
But they all suddenly get transported to Earth 2, where the JSA looks sad. And the JSA is Starman, Dr. Fate, Dr. Midnight, Red Tornado, Wonder Woman of Earth 2, Sandman, Wildcat, Our Man, and Johnny Thunder. Which, by the way, now brings us up to 25 heroes.
Woohoo!
Why so glum? Well, there's a giant hand gripping Earth 2, and the JSA has had no luck releasing it. They don't know what it's made of, but someone called the Iron Hand is involved, and he's given Earth 2 48 hours to surrender or be crushed. Fate used his magic to find an answer, but only came up with a grave, the one seen on the cover. Fate, Zatanna, and Johnny Thunder, actually Thunderbolt, join powers to conjure up Oracle. Not the Barbara Gordon variety, but a blonde demon-y guy.
Okay.
They beseech him for answers, and he responds with a lot of backstory. Some creature named Nebula Man once attacked Earth 2, but was defeated by the Seven Soldiers of Victory. Unfortunately, neither the JLA nor the JSA have any idea who they are, so Oracle provides the roll call. The Vigilante, a cowboy-themed hero with a motorcycle. Kind of think of Roy Rogers' superhero. The Star-Spangled Kid and Stripesy, a young wealthy guy with a strongman sidekick. The Crimson Avenger, DC's earliest superhero actually predating Superman, a crusading newspaper publisher and vigilante, kind of Green Hornet-esque, even at a stereotypical sidekick. The Green Arrow and Speedy, this is the Earth 2 version, but at this point very much a Batman knockoff. There was the Arrow car and the Arrow cave. And the Shining Knight, a time-tossed paladin with a magic sword and a flying horse, which brings us up to 32 euros. But why don't they remember them? Because they no longer exist. Oracle explains the Nebula Man battle threw them into different time periods, and Oracle also conveniently offers them passage to those time periods, which means, of course, they need to split up. Diana Prince decides to hang back. Oracle gives the final exposition, where the Seven Soldiers fought the Hand, who used other villains to fight his battles, which was, in fact, the main storyline of the original series. We see the Seven Soldiers stopping those villains and Vigilante supposedly stopping the Hand, killing him. Sorry, our time is up because it's off to the past. Fate, Adam, and Elongated Man find themselves in the Aztec Empire, where they see the King of the Aztecs, who's Crimson Avenger. They sneak in to see the King, but he zaps them and calls in the guards. Down in the dungeon, Crimson Avenger interrogates our heroes, who quickly break out. I mean, it's chains holding Elongated Man and Dr. Fate.
Yeah, well, that's not going to last.
Fate and Avenger go toe-to-toe on magic, while Elongated Man keeps the guards busy while quipping, which is what he always did, and the Atom punches out Crimson Avenger. They quickly, basically too quickly, find a glowing stone, which once blown up, Crimson Avenger remembers everything. The rock was part of Nebula Man, which conveniently gave him amnesia. Oracle pulls them back, and we cut to a guy monologuing all villainy-like. He's watching the Hand gripping the earth. He's Iron Hand and has a nice Hand logo on his chest and has an actual Iron Hand. He looks like Mr. Drysdale, supervillain. He looks at the reader and yells a lot, taking us to The Hand That Shook the World, Justice League of America, number 101, 1972, by Wine, Dylan, Giella, and Oda. A nice cover art of the heroes pulling at a metal hand. Diana Prince is still hanging around the Justice Society HQ when Green Lantern of Earth 2, Mr. Terrific, and Robin of Earth 2 arrive, which takes us to 35 heroes by my count. Diana provides exposition to them and us, and we cut to Superman, Sandman, and Metamorpho landing in ancient China. A monk welcomes them, assuming they are there to help fight off invaders. It's Genghis Khan, whose legion is led by the Shining Knight. They sneak into the camp. Metamorpho breaks into the knight's tent, who attacks our hero. He retreats. The next morning, the Shining Knight calls for surrender. Supes attacks him, which is a bad call because he's magic-based. Supes tells the others to hold off the horde because he's got to have something to go do. And Metamorpho becomes a tank to scare them off with shells using Sandman's sleep sand. With the horde knocked out, Superman returns, telling the others, oh, I just moved the endangered village out of the way. A little extreme. Sandman gave the Shining Knight an antidote, which comes out of nowhere, and left a note on the sleeping Khan, kind of his M.O. Back at the Justice Society HQ, Green Lantern of Earth 2 appears to be bashing his hands into a wall because he's frustrated. Hey, why don't we go check out that unknown grave that we mentioned last issue? Diana stays behind again. So Robin of Earth 2, Mr. Terrific, and Green Lantern of Earth 2 save kids from an earthquake which is caused by the gripping hand. Off to Hawkman, Wonder Woman of Earth 2, and Dr. Midnight in England in the time of Robin Hood. They mistakenly fight the Merry Men, who explain the sheriff is going to hang Robin Hood. Wonder Woman brings down the enemy drawbridge. Hawkman clears the way. Midnight uses a blackout bomb to break into the jail to find Green Arrow of Earth 2. He's fine, and he knows who he is. He just decided to swap places with Robin Hood to help him. They break out. Green Arrow stops the guards with a net arrow, classic, and says it never fails. And Midnight then cryptically says, well, if that arrow ever does fail you, GA, you won't be alive to know it.
Oh.
Turns out Robin Hood is recovering from wounds somewhere. Don't pull at that string too much. Just move on.
Yes.
Back to Iron Hand. More monologuing. he has a giant print of the newspaper where the seven soldiers defeated him. Why would you have that in your lair? I guess just to destroy it?
I don't know. To remind you that you're supposed to go back and... I don't know.
Batman, Starman, and Hourman arrive in ancient Egypt. They find Stripesy in the slaves working on the pyramids and try to break him out, but a guard holds a knife at his throat. A whip grabs Starman's rod. Think clean thoughts, chum. They surrender and are thrown into the pyramid. Batman uses Hourman's hourglass. He breaks it to cut their bonds. It's just a decoration. Hourman says he'll just take Miraclo and punch their way out, but Batman doesn't want to destroy this future historic treasure. So he convinces Starman that he can call on the rod and find their way out. And we see Starman appearing to pray fervently, and a beam gives them directions to get out of the pyramid. Starman uses the rod to take out the guards, and they find Stripesy hung up like an animal hide, and Batman says, "Let's hit those guards and skin them." Stripesy breaks out. Why didn't he just do that in the first place? And the heroes get called back by Oracle. Diana Prince, still hanging out at the Justice Society HQ, while an iron-handed guy sneaks up behind her. And we move on to And One of Us Must Die. Justice League of America number 102, 1972, by Wine, Dillon, Giella, Giordano, and Oda. A nice cover with Superman on a boulder saying, "For the Earth to live, one of us must die," while the various heroes look scared or contemplative. Hey, it's our old buddy Oracle the Expositioner. And he goes on for a couple pages. Green Arrow, Black Canary, and Johnny Thunder find themselves on the North American plains, and each of the guys want to pair up with Black Canary.
Of course.
Because Green Arrow is currently in a relationship with her, and Johnny Thunder basically lost his title to her back in the 40s, but she won't put up with it. If you want to play tug of war, find yourselves a new rope. They find Vigilante a prisoner of the Indians. This is pre-politically correct days. Johnny Thunder calls up the Thunderbolt, which doesn't arrive, and the Native Americans discover and capture them. The tribal doctor tells them they will all die because the white skins are taking their land. Message coming in, he uses some white powder on them. Back to Vigilante, tied up. Green Arrow shoots off his bonds, allowing him to use his guns to scare off the Native Americans. Thunderbolt finally arrives because it took him a while to find them in the time stream. A buffalo herd is coming their way, and Johnny Thunder has a sneezing fit because of the white powder, the only reason they did the white powder, and can't say the magic words, "Say-o." Finally,
it seemed like he could say quite a bit of other things. I don't know why he couldn't say that.
Finally, he gets mad enough to say them, and Thunderbolt turns the buffaloes into butterflies, and Oracle calls the team back.
And why couldn't Oracle have called the team back before the buffaloes got
there?
He
can't interfere. He's all omniscient. But in one of his things, he says, "But I can't interfere." Aquaman, Wildcat, and Green Lantern of Earth One find themselves in a prehistoric land, and they see Star Spangled Kid, at least a weird picture of him, in a cave surrounded by cavemen. A yellow fog conveniently knocks out GL's ring, so Wildcat has to take him on. Turns out the kid was using quartz to project himself on the wall. They split up in the cave to find him. It starts to rain. The rain turns into a flood. So it's convenient that Aquaman finds the kid, who was hiding away from the cavemen because he had the flu and didn't want to expose them to it.
Well, that was nice of him.
Well, also historically, he didn't want to screw up human history
exactly.
by having one of them die from the flu. GL and Wildcat are on a rock, and GL's generating a nice umbrella for them. Oracle pulls them back to the current time. Flash of Earth One, Zatanna, and Red Tornado find themselves on a Mediterranean island. Flash goes to scout things out, while Zatanna whips up a magic carpet to follow. They come across Speedy, who is now a centaur, and he's protecting Circe, the classic Wonder Woman villain. His arrows are enchanted, so when they hit our heroes, they become Flash as a half-snail, Zatanna as a half-hummingbird, and Red Tornado as a half-mole. So if Red Tornado starts spinning, he's just going to drill himself into the ground. Flash and Red Tornado are enchanted to fight to the death, and Zatanna, who can't talk and use her spells, figures out that her wing humming can somehow duplicate her voice.
Okay.
One backward spell later, they're back to normal. Red Tornado nabs Circe's wand. Hey, actually did something right. And Oracle pulls them back. In the JSA HQ, we get what can only be called a class picture of the JLA, JSA, and Seven Soldiers of Victory. My count is 28 heroes. Add Mr. Terrific, Robin of Earth 2, and Green Lantern of Earth 2, who all walk in, plus Diana Prince, makes 32. Remember, 33 heroes were on the first cover, at least a reference to it. Robin is about to announce what they discovered at the grave when Crimson Avenger stops him. The unknown soldier of victory is his stereotypical sidekick Wing. He is he who defeated Nebula Man and died doing it. 33 heroes. So now they need to rebuild the weapon that stopped Nebula Man, which will stop the giant hand. Unfortunately, Iron Hand takes that moment to grab Diana Prince and hold her for what? For hostage? I mean, if the hand crushes Earth too, he dies too, right? Diana feigns fainting and then chops off his Iron Hand with a judo chop and gives him a judo flip because that's what she was doing then. Oops, the controls for the giant hand were in the Iron Hand, so they still need to build the weapon, which is a cosmic lightning rod. Cue montage of building it. The rod is taken into space to soak up cosmic energy, but the problem is it has to be delivered by hand. Get it? Who would survive it? Superman? Fate says, what about magic? The GL say they would be protected, but GA holds up a yellow arrow, a wooden arrow, which is both of their weaknesses. How long did he have that sitting in his quiver for this occasion? Shining Knight says that Merlin's armor wouldn't save him. And then Batman finds a note. The weapon is gone. Red Tornado took it. And it says, an android is not human. If I perish, all that will be lost is some circuitry and gears. If I am successful, I will see you soon. If I am not, remember me. The gals, of course, weep for him. And one explosion later, the giant hand is gone. And so is Red Tornado. And we get the killed in Vietnam picture in the sky with Red Tornado and Wing. Next class, the Nazis win, and a shameful secret from the past. And sorry, there's no who's on the cover, thank goodness, because this is a very long episode.
Very long.
And so, want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. Call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.